97.9 The Hill, WCHL, and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus, dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, UNC Journalism Professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the scandal that has rocked college basketball. Our guest, Rick Johnson, an attorney specializing in, among other things, sports agent malpractice, athletes' rights, and again, many, many other things. Rick is based in Cleveland, Ohio. So Rick, Pat Ford wrote an article for Yahoo Sports in which he asks, rhetorically, how big is this scandal going to get? How big do you think it's going to get?
Well, depends how big people want it to get. There's three major multi-billion-dollar shoe companies that are all throwing money at this. There's, maybe 75 or so major conference basketball teams. How far do you want to look? And, how much time do they have and money do they have to investigate it, meaning the FBI? It's unlikely that if you have a status quo where the going price for a player is $100,000, if people are talking about the going rate, you would assume that all of those major conference teams would know what that going rate is. And if they know it, they must be participating in it.
Okay, so can we go that far? Can we say that pretty much everybody is involved in this to one degree or another? Or is that? Can we not go that far?
Well, I don't think that you can say for sure, unless you define what it means. Is there guilt by association? So, for instance, we know as much as we know from what we read that Adidas paid money. Does that mean the NCAA, instead of suspending kids like this poor kid at Louisville, how about they suspend Adidas from sponsoring any college team? Now, they haven't done that, but if you wanted to solve the problem, quit picking on the poor kid from Michigan and pick on the huge billionaire, multi-billion-dollar corporation from Germany. That's the problem. You know, if they really cared about this, they would do something like that. But can you imagine what their members would do? Their members would quit.
Sure. Well, that leads me to another question. You know, some have asked, why is the FBI involved in this instead of the NCAA? I have some speculation about that. But is it that we're dealing with these large corporations and the NCAA simply isn't equipped to deal with that?
Well, first of all, remember, the members of NCAA are the universities. The coaches and the players are not members of the NCAA. The NCAA is not a governmental entity. It doesn't have police powers. It doesn't have lawyer powers. It can't issue subpoenas. It's a voluntary group, no different than the AAU. So if you were looking at some sort of criminal enterprise that involved a nonprofit organization, it's unlikely that the nonprofit is equipped to deal with a criminal enterprise, which gets you to the next thing. Is this a criminal enterprise? Did anybody do anything illegal? I would say no. I would say the U.S. attorney in New York has no idea what he's doing. For instance, if Adidas wants to give the family of a basketball player money, Adidas is not regulated by the NCAA, and Adidas is not a member of the NCAA. Adidas hasn't done anything wrong by law. Now, what it has done, apparently, is it hasn't violated NCAA rules. The kid and his family have violated NCAA rules, but the kid and his family aren't members of the NCAA. So neither Adidas nor the kid are members of the NCAA. Louisville is. Louisville, by association, by the kid and his family supposedly taking money, have violated their rules. And now a U.S. attorney in New York wants to say that the German company did what in this process? And if you look at the indictments, all you see is allegations of wire fraud. You don't see any allegations of any underlying criminal conduct, because there isn't any.
All right, so that that brings up another question, because I've read articles that really come down on extreme opposite sides of the issue. Number one, this is Armageddon as far as college basketball is concerned. The other side of the argument is this is major prosecutorial overreach. You seem to be coming down more on that side of the argument.
Well, you know, Armageddon, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be legal. You know, if people think it's unseemly that, shoe companies are running collegiate basketball, they might say, hey, we don't want to do this. And in the O'Bannon case, the judge said, we're going to put limits on paying players, and basically a $2,000 limit, because it would be unseemly and people don't want to watch commercialized college sports. So if you don't want to pay the kids $2,000, you probably don't want a German shoe company paying a kid $100,000, assuming that any of that data is true. And I don't think the data is true at all, that people won't watch if you pay the kids. But, you know, is it Armageddon because, you know, basically, you know, everybody realizes the emperor isn't wearing any clothes? I mean, there is huge money in this. I mean, this is, you know, they have found, they've exposed one Greek statute that's not wearing clothes. My guess is that all the major conferences, or the major, you know, and the teams in them, at least every major conference will have one Louisville. And you would expect that this would be common behavior. So do you want that, and are you going to be able to get rid of it?
Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion of the scandal that has rocked college basketball. We're talking with Rick Johnson, an attorney based in Cleveland. So, Rick, you brought up the AAU, and several articles the writers have said, this is not a secret that everybody knows that the AAU is cooperating, if you will, with shoe companies to send kids to certain schools, and then those kids would go with certain agents, and they would, you know, wear our sneakers, et cetera, et cetera. Is this something that is widely known and should not come to as a shock to anyone?
Especially in men's basketball, it's common knowledge. And the reason that the AAU teams have to cooperate, you know, quote unquote, with the shoe companies is how else are they going to finance their projects? They don't have TV contracts. Nobody's watching 12 and under or 14 and under basketball. So how are they going to get funded for their programs? And who's going to pay the coaches and so on? So, you know, the whether it's a Nike Camp Academy or so on, this has been going on for at least the last two decades, and I assume getting bigger every year, as nobody does anything about it. But, you know, and to some degree, this is going on in many areas of youth sports. Soccer, this is going on. Tennis. I mean, there's, you know, the AAU is thick as thieves with the sports apparel companies, which are largely the shoe companies.
So if you take that logic on to its conclusion, and you say that if Adidas or Nike or whomever wants to sponsor AAU events, don't they have a right to do that?
They do have a right to do that, and they do that. And, you know, many of these kids, many of these camps occur in urban areas that the youths are disadvantaged. And who else is going to pay this? I mean, who's going to pay for a summer camp in the middle of Detroit, you know, in a 50% unemployment district, and it's all, you know, it's all black? Who's going to pay for that summer camp and bring in the coaches? Now, maybe, you know, 1% of those kids are going to be good enough to go to a competitive college. But for the shoe companies, you know, most of these camps are doing good for people who are never going to get out of that area otherwise. I mean, I, you know, I don't see a problem with it.
So what's the problem that folks have then? Why does this feel so wrong to many people?
If you're a capitalist, it doesn't feel wrong. If you think that somehow you're exploiting the kids, it feels wrong. Exploitation it depends on the viewpoint. The coach of Louisville, who earns 2 to 3 times what a NBA coach earns, because Louisville has a zero labor rate for players, whereas, for instance, the Cleveland Cavaliers pays about 55% of their gross revenue to the players, and the coach of the Cavs doesn't earn what Pitino earns. So if this poor kid from Michigan, his family gets $100,000 and they're living in an area where the average income is $15,000 a year, do I think the kid is being exploited because he chose to go someplace that would help his family that's impoverished? Or do I think that young person is now being advantaged? I don't think he's exploited. I think he's advantaged. But, you know, the NCAA would tell you that he's exploited. Is it exploitation to give money to poor people? I don't think so.
All right, so then why the outcry?
Well, first of all, the NCAA and collegiate structure is based upon the NCAA and the university's control of the money flow. If you pay young people, if you allow them to have their names on jerseys and so on,
or seek representation
for the NCAA and the universities to make money. This is all about control of money. That's what all the moralizing is so absurd about. This is about the money stream to the universities and the NCAA. And anytime you have anybody interfere with that, meaning the control of it, who gets to control it, they go crazy. They have a monopoly system going. If you challenge that power structure, they come down on you like a pile of bricks. Now, you know, you know the UNC thing is coming out soon, but the NCAA sure as heck doesn't care as much about education as they do about the money.
All right, so let's go back to using a shoe company, and they've made an investment in these AAU tournaments. That's capitalism at its best, right? Because they expect a return at some point for having done that.
They expect that if they put money into a nonprofit system, that somebody will come out of there who will be a star, who will have an affinity towards Adidas, who will promote Adidas, be agreeable to signing with Adidas, and reflect well on Adidas. That's why any company sponsors anybody, is that you expect that they will eventually become successful and that they will... That will be good PR and good advertising for your brand.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with attorney Rick Johnson about the scandal in college basketball. If indeed it is a scandal. Rick, that, you know, I find myself sort of torn here. If a company wants to invest in a certain way, who are we to tell that company not to do that? And yet we've been so hammered, if you will, all these years by this idea, which I think is a false narrative, of amateurism in the NC2A. Why am I personally, why are people like me having such a hard time with these two concepts?
Because of the decades of propaganda that you just mentioned, you know, the concept of the student athlete that doesn't exist in men's college basketball at the major conference level. You have graduation rates that are barely a third of the team, and people talk, they call them student athletes, which is a term invented to deny workmen's compensation benefits from these players who don't have health insurance or disability insurance. But we've been hammered into, for decades, all these public service announcements from the NCAA about education this and education that, and it's all baloney. It's all baloney. But you know, whenever you shift a paradigm, and people have been believing forever like going to church was safe, and you find out maybe sometimes it's not. That's very troubling to people when they've bought into something for maybe their entire life, and all of a sudden it turns out to be not true. College basketball is not about education. Not anymore, not at the major conference level, which is only about 75 teams. And, you know, the NCAA is 1,200 universities. Major conferences, about 75 teams. We're talking about a very small percentage of the players who are not students in the real sense of the term. And people don't want to deal with that. Because if they have to deal with it, they then have to admit 80% or so of those players are black. They're not getting paid. They don't graduate. And then they have to say, Jesus, aren't we exploiting these kids? That's very troubling. So, you know, most people go to sleep. They wake up in the morning. They go, God, I'm not thinking about that today.
All right. So I don't want to put words in your mouth. So you tell me if I'm wrong here. But what I hear you saying is it's not Adidas exploiting kids. It's the NCAA exploiting kids.
It is the NCAA exploiting kids. And the NCAA is its members. Its members, Louisville in this situation, is exploiting every person on that basketball team. Louisville is making hundreds of millions of dollars on that basketball team. They don't give anything to the kids. And as I already explained to you, the college basketball coaches earn 2 to 3 times what an NBA coach earns because they don't pay players. Why would you ever expect in an amateur model that an amateur coach would earn multiples of what a professional coach would earn?
All right, so what's the answer? What do we do?
The answer
get rid of the NCAA? You know, some would argue that the major conferences have supplanted the NCAA anyway.
They're having a slow dance of separating. The Power Five have autonomy, and the NCAA pays Division II and Division III members to be in the NCAA to pretend that there's some large organization. The money comes from the Power Five football teams and what I call the Power Six when you add in the Big East with basketball. That's the majority of the money in college sports. The NCAA makes all their money off of the Final Four. So the NCAA itself makes all its money off of men's basketball, $750, $800 million a year. That's it.
Not so much off football anymore because of how that playoff system is set up. So this really is the NCAA's cash cow, is men's basketball.
The NCAA hasn't made money off football since the 80s when they lost the lawsuit against the universities. Football revenue is controlled by the major conferences and the schools. And basketball revenue is controlled by the major conferences and the schools, except for March Madness. The March Madness tournament itself is the only thing that the NCAA has that makes significant money.
All right. So, could this particular scandal be result in the end of the NCAA?
You know, there's so many vested interests in this. You know, for instance, look at the coaching structure. Every major conference coach and assistant coach, because many of the assistant coaches earn more than the pro coaches. Every one of these coaches and every person on that staff and every weight room director who earns a couple hundred thousand a year when their job is really worth $50,000 a year, there is a huge percentage of people, every athletic director who's earning millions of dollars, none of these people in a competitive market are worth that if you had to pay the players. So you have so many people involved in this that have a vested, you know, have their hands in the cookie jar, and they don't want to give it up. So the NCAA doesn't just exist by itself. It's a cabal of thousands of people that all have an interest in basically living off the kids.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Rick Johnson. Thanks to engineer Gary Kirk. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.